better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.
And we are live. Welcome, folks, to episode 3,541 of the Survival Podcast. And we're going to talk about something that's near and dear to my heart today. Actually, a few things that are near and dear to my heart. Farming, and specifically small-scale regenerative-style farming with livestock. We're also going to talk about how to get your money back from your government. In other words, retrieving your stolen money through something called a grant. Now, when I have people on to talk about these types of things, whether it be someone who's actually farming today, like C.J. Lafferty, that we'll have on in just a moment, or somebody from NRCS or something, people say, well, you're supposed to be a libertarian. Hell, you're an anarchist. You shouldn't be, you know, getting money from the government. I always put it this way. The United States government has probably taken close to $1 million from me across my lifetime in total taxation. When they pay me $1,001,000 plus interest on the money that they've taken, then I'll stop worrying about taking money back from them. Until then, I will get every dime I can to do all the good things in the world that I can, including using grants and rebates and other programs like that. That's part of what Charles is here to talk about with us today. I will also tell you that it's kind of cool having this guy about to come on with me, because he's literally located in the backyard of where I grew up as a teenager. He's in a place near a place called Hamburg, Pennsylvania, which is just south of where I like went to high school. I mean, I hunted all around his place, fished all around his place. Like, I got on the Appalachian Trail when I took my walk back in 1993. I'm going to say 35 to 40 miles to the west of Hamburg. So, I mean, like, this is just a place that I know well. Some of the stuff we talk about today will have some things that are unique to Pennsylvania, but there's probably an analog wherever you are. Some may apply to veterans and some may not, but usually there's something available to anyone if they look hard enough. So we're going to really focus today on what you do with the grants and how you apply for them and how to write a compelling proposal and some other stuff like that. I will have CJ on in just a moment. First things first, let's take care of our sponsors of the day. Sponsor of the day, number one today, is Anton's Land of Biltong. I get to do something kind of, mean and cruel today. I get to eat biltong right in front of the eyes of our guests, because Anton actually pays me in biltong. And my biltong came in yesterday, so I still have some, because usually I go through that box. Well, not in a day, but in a few days. So right now I still have some of everything he sends me. He sends me his straight-up Angus biltong, which is awesome. I usually get a half pound every 2 weeks as well of the Wagyu. American Wagyu biltong, which is just sublime, and a package of the Dewar's dry sausage, a South African style of sausage. If you love meat like I do, you got to try this stuff. This is like meat candy. It's good for you. It's high quality made. Anton's one of us. He doesn't live that far from me, and he's looking to move right now because he's run into the Department of Making You Sad, i.e. the local government Karens. And he's already was going to move, but he's just accelerating his move to a new location. He's trying to liquidate inventory. So buy some biltong, get your discount if you're an MSB member, and you should be, and help a man fight the state all in one. Check it out today at Anton's Land of Biltong. It's actually landofbiltong.com is the URL. Next up today, Joel Riles with Fortress Canine. By the way, Joel will definitely be here presenting at the workshop in November. I'm going to talk to Anton about that too and see if I can get him on board with coming out for that and bringing some sample biltong. If you want to learn to train your dog, you want to check out canineacademy.us. It is a great place to train yourself, to train your dog. Dogs are easy. People are hard. People are the ones that don't do what they're supposed to do. Joel uses a method we call the 3 C's. And we developed that together. It's the same method he's always used. We just put a name on it so that it was easy to remember and easy to condition that use into what you're doing. And the conditioning is the 4th C, by the way. What does that all mean? Check out canineacademy.us to learn more. And remember, you can go there right now. You can sign up for the Problem Solving Library. It's basically a small free course where you can see how Joel teaches and decide if this is right for you or not. With that, I want to bring my special guest on the air with us. CJ, man, welcome to the Survival Podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
Hey, before we dig into grants and the opportunities that are for established farmers or even if they're creative enough homesteaders, you're farming now and all. You mentioned you'd been in the military. Now, what is your background? Did you grow up in that part of Central PA, or did you eventually move there? Like, what led you to where you are now in the first place?
So when I was a kid, I grew up in Quakertown, which is not terribly far from here. I had no interest really in agriculture. I actually grew up in Haycock, which is a very rural suburb of Quakertown near Lake Nockamixon. No interest in agriculture, really no interest in anything. I was not very good in high school. I was certainly a disciplinary case, and that led to me going to college and not being mature enough to do that either. So that ended up to, you know, I dropped out of college and joined the Army, and that's really where I started to get things together. Initially, so I've been in the Army for 26 years. I'm still in, but early on there, I didn't have an interest in ag still. Like I was a scout, so I was always outdoors in the woods. But growing things was never really interesting to me. I don't, you know, but eventually, I joined the Pennsylvania Army National Guard, moved back here, lived all over the place, worked all over the place from Erie to Philly, and then ended up, settling in Douglasville on a 10th of an acre. And that's when I decided to do all kinds of agricultural stuff. So my 10th acre lot included a 20th acre yard.
Okay.
That half was a garden. I had two goats. I had chickens. I really overburdened that 20th of an acre. My wife encouraged me to get something bigger. So in 2019, before the real estate market went insane, we picked up 12 acres here at just outside of Hamburg. And that's when I really got to kick it into high gear.
So let's see. Probably smart guy. Screwed off in school. You don't just live where I grew up. You are me. You're just, you know, you went to college for a little while and I didn't. Army straightened your life out. I think there's a lot to be said for the whole rural Pennsylvania thing, though. I think there's a lot of people just like us there. It's good to see some of them getting into farming. When I got your app to be on the air, I'm like, yeah, this is a cool topic. Let's start off with what are some available grant opportunities for people that are already established as farmers in some way?
So there's a ton. There's various organizations. One that I'm using actively right now is SARE, which is Sustainable Agriculture Research and Education, specifically Northeast SARE because it's a regional organization. They provide like a variety of different grants. I want to say they have maybe 10 grant programs. Some are specific to researchers, so much larger scale. But the one I'm participating in is a farmer research grant. So it's very awards are up to $30,000, but many of them are less. For instance, the one I'm doing is about $11,000, and it's to develop a silvopasture in the woods on the farm here using swine. So that's a great opportunity for anybody who's filed a Schedule F. And can, you know, they want to see sometimes 2 years, sometimes only 1 year of active farming for profit. And then you're eligible to apply and really grow your business.
Yeah, I've said to people that like one of the reasons we did the duck business the way we did and actually built it to like, you know, reasonable cash flow. We were doing about $30,000 in gross sales a year reported.
Right.
But some of it wasn't. We didn't make a lot of money with it. We didn't lose enough to offset it to where it actually was a negative. But we did it because we had thought about doing more. And just the fact that you had a going concern and you filed a Schedule F opened up some opportunities like this and made them more, you know, possible to do.
So my farm is very similar. My annual revenue is about $30,000. Very, very little of that is profit, if any.
Yeah.
So the good thing about the grants is typically when you write your proposal, the plan out front is to expense 100% of the grant award. So it ends up being a wash for tax purposes. Mm. The SARE grant that I was just discussing is different. You can factor in and should factor in your labor rate to that. So obviously you're going to receive a 1099 for that.
Okay.
Because that's, you're paying yourself a wage off the grant. But short of that, many of the other grants, I'm a member of the Pennsylvania Veteran Farming Network, which, you know, they do offer a grant. It's a force multiplier grant, which I benefited from in the past. That is specifically for infrastructure or projects on farm. You could even buy livestock with it. They offer it once a year, but that's one of the grants where you expense 100% of your award, and now you get the stuff without having to pay any tax on it. Obviously, another huge benefit of having a going concern and filing a Schedule F is you can avoid state sales tax in almost every case, which adds up over time.
Yeah. So, and so I think it's important for people to understand, he's not talking about avoiding sales tax on what you sell to an end customer. He's talking about stuff that you buy for your farm, you don't pay sales tax on, tax exempt status. That's every time I go to freaking Tractor Supply now that we're no longer an actual farm and they ask me if I'm exempt, I'm like, no. No. Yeah, that's actually really cool. And what about people who are maybe not yet official? Is there anything that they can get done to get out of the ground? Actually, wait, I want to back up. I had a thought there and it strayed away from me. So one of the things I learned in the work that we did with the farm in West Virginia was that you think the smart thing to do if you have capital is to pay out of pocket. And that is really bad tax wise with infrastructure, because you mentioned infrastructure there. So like you put in a fence with your own money and you spend like $10,000 put fencing in, you'd think that year you'd take $10,000 off your taxes. Well, you do not. You will have to depreciate it over like 30 years. And so you've expended all this expense this year and you're still paying tax on your revenue as though you didn't. But if you borrow money, then it's totally a different way that it's handled. So you're telling me if I got a grant to put in infrastructure that's permanent that I keep, I don't actually report that grant as any form of income, and so it's not an expense, but I also haven't created the expense for myself, and I don't have to pay any tax against that grant.
So just to make sure I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
For instance, I am putting in a fence with a grant this year. Okay. But last year I did a waterline project. I put in 3 frostproof hydrants all over my farm. Because before that, I was running hundreds and hundreds of feet of garden hose, and that is a ineffective way to do business.
Yes, it is.
Plus carrying 5-gallon buckets of water uphill is no fun either.
No.
So I received thousands of dollars to hire an excavator, trench, 1,000 feet of trench, put in PEX line, plumb in hydrants, plumb in a drinking post for the cows, which if you're not familiar with drinking posts, they're, in my opinion, the greatest farm invention ever. That's something everybody should get into because it's the biggest time saver I've ever done on my farm. But I received an award of $5,000 to do that work. And when I filed my taxes with my CPA, I had $5,000 of income and a $5,000 expense with receipts to marry up to it perfectly. So I did not show any...
But, so is it handled differently because it's a grant? Because like I said, if I expend that money out of pocket, I don't get that offset.
Yeah, so you're right. I don't know if it's handled any differently.
I don't understand. Stuff has changed in the code. There was a lot of stuff that changed under Trump. So
I didn't get any kind of 1099 for it anything. It depends on the grant. Some do send it. For instance, the one that includes labor, but I know that it was treated for my tax filing as $5,000 of income with $5,000 expense before tax, so that it was a net zero when we filed.
Okay. As long as you don't pay tax on it, I'm good. I mean, honestly, if somebody's going to give me free money and I have to pay tax on it, I'll still do it. But if I don't want to give it back, if I don't have to, I mean, it is kind of redundant. You're giving me money from the taxpayers to benefit the taxpayers, and then you want some of the money. Give me less, I guess, would be the way I'd look at it.
Well, not all of them are government grants, right? Yeah. So the two that I've talked about so far, one's through the Vermont Department of, well, I get it from the University of Vermont. They're financial. And the other one was from a private organization. The Pennsylvania Veteran Farming Network is not a government organization. I have received grants from government organizations as well. And again, it's handled the same way as far as I can see, unless I'm ignorant of the way my taxes are done, which is possible.
Yep. So go ahead.
So some other grant opportunities that I've taken advantage of. The only one on this list that I haven't successfully achieved is the Food and Animal Concerns Trust, which is an organization. I believe they're national. Well, I know they're national. They're focused on sustainable ag, and they want to support beginning farmers and I guess, you know, the non-typical, you know, they cater to the BIPOC population as much as possible, but veterans are often included in that. So they have a grant, it's called the Fund a Farmer Grant. Every year I apply. So far I have not succeeded, but I keep trying. But it's to input or sustainable agricultural practices on going concerns.
Okay.
The Farmer Veteran Coalition, this is the first grant I ever got, and it was before I had filed my first Schedule F. If people look up that, they are focused on getting people started. So you can apply for that, and all you have to do is have a business plan. You don't have to have executed it. So I was able to get my first batch of stuff to do pastured broilers, $4,000 worth of equipment, waterers, feeders, electric fencing, electric fence chargers, all the stuff you need, and lumber to build chicken tractors, all because of the Farmer Veteran Coalition. And then I've also benefited from programs run by the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture.
Very cool, because that's where I was going to go next. What about people who haven't actually started yet? Like, there's one right there. Are there other ways they can get some money to get off the ground? What that makes me think of when you talk about it with veterans is, back in like Roman times, when the legions would come home and get discharged, they would actually give them farmland. Because if you gave a soldier farmland, he went off and farmed, and he didn't like go into town and start cracking heads after you taught him how to do it for 20 years. I think it would be very good for many of our veterans, especially those who've served overseas in combat, honestly, anywhere, because if you serve in the third world, it alters your head quite a bit. I think it'd be a very beneficial thing to put more farmers out in the field farming. So whether it's vets or others, are there ways that people can use these, like you said, just a business plan and maybe get some money to get seed capital?
Yes, absolutely. So step one, as you just said, is to write a business plan. It doesn't take a long time. It doesn't cost any money. There are free templates and websites. You can just get on there, and it's as simple as it asks you a question. What's your proposed business name? And then you put something in, right? And it's just like forms you fill out, and it will spit out on the tail end a full professional business plan. It doesn't cost you a dime. But many of these funding sources want that in place. They want to see that you're actually interested. And then for the grants for non-established farmers, they certainly are available, but they're almost always a reimbursement type program. So you spend the money out of pocket, whether you have to borrow it or spend it out of your savings account. You do the work, and then you send in photographs before and after the project with receipts, and then they send you a check to cover the cost of your receipts. For instance, I did one before I was really established. I probably had a Schedule F or two, but Pennsylvania Department of Ag offers a reimbursement program for, it's Farm Vitality is what they call it, but I replaced all the lighting in my barn from incandescent lighting to LED tube lights.
Okay.
Probably $1,000 worth of electric. I had to run wire, and the state covered all of that, 75% reimbursement.
Okay. Is when you do those where you pay out of pocket and then get reimbursed, know that you have the grant approved before you spend the money, or is it a gamble?
No, it's there probably are some that are a gamble. They don't always communicate well, right? But in this case, I was told, yes, your project is approved. I submitted a template or a proposal, like, hey, here's what I want to do. Here's my shopping list from Lowe's of what I want to buy. here's a picture of my barn as it exists right now. I sent it off to PA Department of Ag, and they sent me back, yes, go ahead and do it.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Are there, you already mentioned some veterans programs. So are there specifically those or others where veterans maybe have an advantage here over non-veterans?
Absolutely. So, again, broad scope, veterans are considered an underserved population. So they're able to take advantage of that, right, wrong, or indifferent. And that gets them a leg up on just, you know, a standard person graduating high school and wanting to start a farm. Additionally, now I've never run into one that's like funded by the VA, for instance. I've never done any VA grants or anything like that. But there are, especially in Pennsylvania veteran farming organizations that are specific. Their stated mission is to outfit and equip farmers in Pennsylvania that have honorable discharges or are currently serving with funds to start and further farming exercises. Again, the Northeast SARE grant, I believe I got a leg up on that because I was a veteran, because I was considered underserved. And that organization's great. They very responsive, very interested in sustainable regenerative practices. For instance, more so than like, say, NRCS. I've tried to do work with NRCS. And while the people I've dealt with are great, NRCS hates pigs in the woods. They think that the feral hog risk is I think personally bigger than it really is.
Yeah, I agree.
First of all my boars are castrated, and I use copious electric fencing with lots of voltage, right? So although I have had one pig escape, the pigs only went 100 yards and then they came back to where they knew their food was. So once they're trained, the pigs don't really want to run away. And again, all the boars are castrated. So unless it's like a Jurassic Park scenario, they're not going out there and breeding. So I'm not contributing to feral hogs, you know, by raising pigs in the woods, which is where a pig belongs. So that organization's great. And I would tell people to look at them first. They offer, I mean, millions and millions of dollars annually in grants to a variety of different categories, and that's the first one I would go to take.
Which organization was that again?
That's SARE. I'm in the Northeast region, so Northeast SARE for me, but there's you know, it's regional. So they're an excellent organization. And then in Pennsylvania, again, look to the Pennsylvania Veteran Farming Network, go to their website, and they're a clearinghouse essentially of grant opportunities and PA Department of Ag sponsored opportunities for veterans. And then every other state, you know, talk to your Department of Ag and look for state specific, veteran farming organizations. I'm sure they exist. And then, you know, obviously participate heavily in them and you'll reap what you sow.
Gotcha. Is there anything else you want to say about, SARE, which is Sustainable Agriculture Research and Education, before we move on from there?
No, like I said, that's just, they've enabled me to do so much. I wanted to give them a big plug, right? So I think they're awesome and I think people should check them out. They've done a lot of good for me and they've helped me take my farm from, you know, a $10,000 a year concern to a $30,000 a year concern in 1 year.
Gotcha. You did mention the hog issue with NRCS and I've talked to a lot of people that had really great results with them, but I mean, not for that. Like, I didn't know that because I didn't talk to anybody that tried to use them for anything that involved pigs in the woods. Are there any other issues that you've experienced with NRCS or what have you?
No, again, NRCS only doesn't like pigs in the woods, but they've offered to help me. So I have my property is essentially divided north to south by a wood line. I have the pigs in the woods, and then I have open fields where I keep pastured broilers, turkeys, and cows. And NRCS is all about helping me develop manure management plans, watering plans. For instance, that grant that I told you about through the it was called the Force Multiplier grant through the Pennsylvania Veteran Farming Network for the water line. NRCS approved me for the same project.
Okay.
But their timeline was in, you know, 2 years or something, where this organization gave me the money just, hey, go do it now. So I didn't get to take advantage of the NRCS grant because I needed to get the work done. And you know,
sure.
So, and by the time they had notified me that they approved my project, I had already done the work, you know, like, so it was kind of like, hey, thanks, but give it to somebody else.
So I kind of feel like that a person applying for these grants should be like any intelligent young person going to college. There's like billions of scholarships out there, and I've had young people ask me, what scholarship should I apply for? And the answer is all of them, right? And that's how I kind of see this grant thing. Like if you apply, you find this project, and you say, here's all the grants that could possibly contribute to it, propose to all of them, and then of your acceptances, take the one that most benefits you.
Or take them all.
Or take them all.
Yeah. So, okay. So what I try to do is I in say January, because grants are annual. So in January, I'll lay out, like, I'll walk around my property and be like, all right, what's my dream? What would I like to get done this year?
Okay.
And I'll come up with like 5-10 things.
Okay.
And then I will, in January, I'll start Googling grant opportunities in Pennsylvania, grant opportunities for farmers, all these different searches, and I'll yield 15 different grant opportunities that I might be eligible for. Then I get into each one. If I meet the eligibility requirements, I find out which project is most likely to be well received by that organization. And then I plug that project in and I create a grant application and I submit it. And then, you know, if I see two, then I'll submit them both, but I'll vary it enough that I can still execute both projects. So if it's like watering systems, well, I'll just have two watering systems, you know, and I'll use them both. And that way you're putting yourself out there as much as possible, having as many, you know, baited rods in the water so that you can reel in as many fish as bite. And then, it's worked for me in the past. I've had years where I've gotten three different grants, you know, to almost 20 grand of grant money to get a lot of work done real fast.
Yeah. Okay. Very cool. But how might that work? Let's say that, because you said take all of them. Let's say I put in a grant request for a specific project. I get it approved by two different entities. Doesn't one make the other not available to me? Or like, can maybe I part it out and say, well, this is for, I'm doing a high tunnel and this is for the electrical work and this is for the tunnel itself. I mean, I guess there's.
It would depend. It would depend on how you write the proposal, right? But what I would, so yes, what you're describing could result in you, I guess, disqualifying yourself from one. So you would have to take the one that's most advantageous and then decline the other. I mean, that's just being ethical, right? So because they're going to want evidence. So could you, in theory, take the money for both, do one project and submit results to both? Yes, but I wouldn't recommend that at all. But one thing you can do is a lot of these applications are mirror images of each other. So for instance, your business plan, it's applicable to all of your applications, all your proposals. If you're doing a fencing project, quote your fence project by linear feet. And then if you're approved for 1,000 linear feet, cool, do it. If two people approve 1,000 linear feet grant, do 2,000 feet of fence, you know, like just fence in another spot as long as you have the land to do it. There's nothing wrong with that. You're getting two grants for the same project, but you're getting twice the work and the money's still spent ethically.
Got you. All right. So, are there any other real potential drawbacks in working with NRCS as somebody that's focused on livestock? Because honestly, most of the discussion that I have had with people about NRCS has been things like high tunnels, cover crop projects, earthworks, ponds, and things like that are more soil oriented. And, you know, obviously the number one thing you can do for soil is put vegetation through an animal and deposit it back. But, you know, maybe they don't grasp that. So have you had any other issues that, like, you get in the way of working with NRCS because of livestock?
No. NRCS is, if you're doing poultry or ruminants, they're all about it. They think it's a good thing. They do like to keep them out of riparian zones. So they will, for instance, they'll support fencing projects, 100% reimbursement in some cases, if you are fencing animals out of a natural waterway. And then, you know, they're They will do grading for you. They will do water lines. Like I said, I had an approved water project that I couldn't take advantage of. And then they'll do cross fencing depending on the situation to improve rotational grazing. They're big on rotational grazing. And, and again, I know they support high tunnels, and I think they put a 5-year life on the high tunnel. But I don't, it's not my farming plan. So I don't have any high tunnels. I don't do a lot of vegetables.
Gotcha. Gotcha. What do you think is the way to, like, you know, let's say put your best foot forward when you're applying for a grant? Like, whenever you interview for a job, there's certain things you do and don't do with a cover letter and a resume. Is there anything you can do to maybe up your odds of getting a yes?
Absolutely. So do your research, right? So you receive the, they're usually called a call for proposals, but it's the organization that wants to give you money putting out there exactly what they're looking for. So research the organization, be very familiar with what their goal is, and what they want to see in an applicant, and then make your proposal as perfectly as possible, mirror exactly what they want to see. Research the organization, find out, are they into soil regeneration? Are they into planting trees? Whatever they're wanting to do, then make your project, you know, achieve their goal. That's going to give you a leg up right away. Then when you're writing your proposal, read exactly what their stated instructions are. Because if you send up, if they say in 100 words or less, describe blah, 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 and you submit a 500 word paragraph, then they're just going to throw your proposal right out. It doesn't even get read. Or if you only submit 10 words instead of using most of the 100, then you look lazy, right?
Yeah.
Like I understand there's value in brevity, but it's already designed to be brief because they got one guy reading 100 proposals. He doesn't have time to read 500 words, but he does have time to read 100, right? So use the space allotted, don't exceed it, follow the instructions, and don't make yourself get ruled out by some kind of, you know, obvious mistake that could have been avoided.
Yeah, and I'll add on that, like, one of the greatest tools that we have available to us right now for things like this is ChatGPT. I wouldn't necessarily let ChatGPT write a grant proposal, but like what CJ just said, you know, do this in 100 words or less. Do your best. Use 120 words. Drop it in ChatGPT and say, improve this for me and reduce it to 100 words. And then when it's done, ask it to count it for itself. Because sometimes it doesn't do what you ask. So you use it to check itself. But I've used it for a lot of different things now. And not so much do this for me, but fix this, correct this, check this, reduce this, make this more concise, stuff like that. It's a huge time suck saver. I just ran a little piece today for Billy Bond that I'll talk about when we get done with this interview on a thing he's doing, like a homestead jamboree. And he didn't include a title or a promotional blurb. So I dropped his piece there, and he just spit it out for me and saved me probably, you know, 20 minutes of me brain massaging it, and it just, boom, there's an answer. Like, so I would say, you know, be willing to use tools like that. I know we have people that are afraid of ChatGPT. We have people, you know, like our friend Nathaniel here, he's afraid to take money from the government because then they'll know whatever he thinks they're going to know. My view of that is, just for anybody that's in that boat, I want to know what you think the United States federal government wants to know about you or your farm that it won't know unless you take a grant to put in fences for your pigs. Like, it's amazing. Like, the people that are like this, they're also the people that already realize the government knows everything it wants to know about you. But what do you think they're going to gain by giving you a check? And I'm interested in what they think that answer is. I'm not really asking that question of you unless you want to comment on it some way.
No, I think that, that's a kind of a defeatist attitude, right? So yeah. If you're, and frankly, people with that attitude aren't going to go through this process and try and get a grant anyway. So
yeah.
It's a non-issue.
I think most of them don't have any money either. Like he said, he doesn't give the government but $200 a year. You probably don't have any money either. Like, you can be poor and stay off grid if you want to, is the way I look at it. When I say off grid, I don't mean the way we talk about it. I mean, trying to be like
the radar.
the off-the-radar ninja type, like, off-grid. It just isn't a real thing anymore. I would take any grant that they would approve on my property that I wanted to do anyway. And I think that's part of it is, like, only apply for the things you want. Like, because people say, well, if I take the money, I have to do what they say. Yeah, but you, like,
it's for saying you say what you want up front.
It's like the kid holding his breath, right? Like, I want to put in a high tunnel. I want to put in a fence. I want to put in, you know, water to the back of the property, whatever. I want to put a road in, whatever it is. And I want to do this, and they'll give me money to help me do this, but I don't want it because then I have to do it because I took the money to do the thing that you see. It's like this circular loop. And I think part of the problem is, to be fair, the government's done so much messed up stuff that has people in kind of this mental vapor lock. But, man, there's a point where you just say, this is how the world runs. And if I want to get ahead and my competitors are using these tools and I'm not, then I'm going to fall behind.
Yeah. And again, I don't see any kind of, with your example, you're putting in a fence to contain pigs. You're not disclosing any information that anybody wants anyway. Right.
So, yeah.
So if you can get, you know, what you rightfully term a tax refund of sorts, right, then get it and do the work, and then, you know, reap the benefit and use it to accelerate your business, because that should be the goal, right? I understand that homesteaders, you know, many of the grant opportunities aren't there for homesteaders. They are, if they are, they're in reimbursement form, but you make your homestead a business, you know, to sell $1,000 worth of agricultural product annually, and you'll save that again in sales tax, and you open so many doors. So, you know, I would encourage everybody to start a business of some sort, even if it's super tiny, just for all the doors it opens for you.
I agree with that. The tax advantages, access to things like grants. And I think another thing we should say before we move on here, because Lee is saying this here, there are lots of grants. You've mentioned a couple already that have nothing to do with the government anyway. There's grants that come from universities. There's grants that come from private charities. There's tons of grants beyond the federal government's version thereof.
Yeah, I would say most of them are not government grants. There are a bunch, but most of the ones I've taken advantage of are through either universities or, by and large, private organizations that are, you know, that their focus is sustainable ag. So, but back on how to, like, put your best foot forward, so to speak, another, in my opinion, vital thing to do is look at previous awardees of the grant. So most grant organizations are going to publish, hey, here's things that have been awarded in the past and have been successful. And then, to the best of your ability, mimic those. So, or read 10 of them and take the best parts of all of them so that you're creating what will be viewed as, like, the ideal proposal. You know, what I do is I'll find, and they'll give you for samples. They'll give you, hey, here's last year's awardees. Here's the projects they wanted to do. Here's their proposals. And you just got to look in and see what kind of language did they use, where they, you know, and all, you're going to find, lots of similarities between them. They're all going to be written in an excited voice. They're going to be very positive. They're going to be work related, like effort forward kind of speech, you know, like instead of saying, I would like to blah, 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 say, I'm going to do X. Just that style of speaking is going to make your proposal stand up above the competition every time.
In other words, kind of talk like you're already doing it.
Yeah. And act like, so people are going to want to give money to a motivated individual rather than to Eeyore. Right.
So, yeah. Speak as though success is a foregone conclusion, as though you've done this 100 times and you're just asking for money to do it again, even if you didn't.
Right, absolutely. And then mimic the winners, right? Last year's winners are going to be published. Read them and mimic them. So, and that way you're a winner, right? So
Yeah. If somebody puts the answer sheet out to the test before you take the test, maybe take a look at the answer sheet, right? Yeah.
Certainly.
That would make sense, right? And know that your competitors will if you don't. Because I never really thought of that. I didn't know that they put out all – I knew they put out, like, who won. I didn't know they actually put out – like, you could read the proposals that were selected.
In many cases, yes.
In many cases, that's...
I would say that's how I've been successful on several highly competitive grants, is by not plagiarizing, but just mimicking the people that were successful.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've talked to people that have done the High Tunnel grant with NRCS. I've had two different people on the show, totally different regions, totally different reps, and they basically said there's like 4 years of commitment. You have to plant cover crop inside them or whatever. And like both of them said, like the person they worked with came by like one time, looked at it, and went, okay. And at 4 years, like, do whatever you want. I mean, and so I think one of the other things is, hey, Alabama, saying know exactly what the grant says and hold them to it. But you should know if there are any conditions, what those conditions are, and you should be okay with them before you accept it.
And typically before you accept it, like before they send you a check, they're going to send you a contract.
Okay.
And it's just a one pager many times, but it simply says, like, you agree to take this money to do this thing exactly this way as you proposed you would do.
Yeah.
And in the end, you're going to send us a picture or two. One of them has to have your face in it. And we're free to publish those on our organization's website to show success stories, which, frankly, if you're asking for their money, you should be willing to do that. Right. So, and if you're not, then don't ask for the money.
Yeah. And that contract or those obligations will exist, whether it's a government grant or a private grant.
Absolutely.
Because everybody has an agenda, right? Like the University of Vermont has an agenda. They're trying to promote their program, and they're trying to solicit money from benefactors as well. And they want to be able to hold it up to a bunch of rich fat cats on an annual thing and say, look what we did.
Absolutely.
And I don't have a problem with that. If you want my money, I want to know what you're going to do with it. And a lot of their money does come from, you know, alumni, especially when you get into the university system. There's a ton of their money comes from alumni.
And if you're running a business as a benefit of the grant, then having your picture out there is good for you anyway. It's free marketing.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would take advantage of it.
Can you tell people, like, how do they figure out what grants are available? Because this all sounds great, but... Like, I remember back in the day, there was this weird dude that dressed like the Riddler from Batman. I mean, like a 60s Riddler. And he used to sell this giant book in infomercials at night of all these government grants. And fortunately, we don't live in that world anymore. There's some things we lost, I think, by leaving that 80s and 70s world behind. But there's some things we've gained by moving past. So there's got to be ways to quickly research and ascertain, like, if I want to do X, what are all the grants that can contribute to X on my farm or homestead?
So the way I would do it, so if I go right now to Google and search like government grants for farmers, I'm going to find something. And one's probably going to be like grants.com. That's not the way to go. So that's going to give you a lot of not useful information. But if you search a very specific thing, if you search, you know, whatever you are, so beginning farmer grant in Pennsylvania, then that's going to give you a narrowed search window by default. And then once you get in there, go through the hits and pick the one that goes directly to the organization that's offering the grant. That way you bypass the middleman who's trying somehow to make, you know, to be, you know, at advantage somehow by getting you this information. Go right to the organization, and then there'll usually be a link or something saying, here's how to apply for the grant in 2024. Or 2025, you know, it will be the upcoming grant season. So cut out all the middlemen, go right to the source, be specific in your searches. And then once you do see an opportunity, they're going to have very stringent deadlines. So make sure you adhere to all the deadlines, because, again, it would be terrible to spend this time. Some grants, I put 80 hours into a grant once, and I got it, but it was a lot of work. Had I missed the deadline due to negligence, that would have been two work weeks wasted, right? So I would be specific in your searches, and then once you find something, find out all the rules and conform to them.
Gotcha. And I also would say, like, one of the things with the rules is look for things like, what is the duration of the requirement? Like I said, the High Tunnel grant, because I looked at doing this one pretty hard. It was kind of the soil improvement component that I'm like, well, that's not really, like, you have to grow in ground with that program. And I can't, like, right. I don't care how much climate control I put in. Like, the place I would put it literally has 2 inches of I would call it soil. It's not soil. It's dirt. It's 2 inches of dirt and it's limestone. So that program didn't work for me. And that's an example of I wouldn't do it just to get the money. I would do it because it fits. But one of the things I was concerned about, well, how long do I have to placate these people? And when I heard 4 years, I'm like, you know, I had a guy on it. His name was Rob, and he put in like a $40,000 high tunnel system, and he got something like $28,000 of it covered by the grant. So he's effectively buying a $40,000 system for $12,000.
And they probably see the usable life of that fabric, that plastic, as 4 years, but yeah, odds are it's probably closer to a decade. So now he gets 6 years to use the high tunnel. He can put beds in there, raised beds or something if he wanted, or put animals in there instead of just growing in the ground for soil regeneration like the, you know, like was the stated goal.
And that's a big system, and that's, you know, that's kind of what I was looking at. Like, I have the space, I could do something like that. And I saw it more as like a hydroponics system for my, for where I am, what could be done with that to sell like to restaurants and stuff that want to do farm to table would be great. And, you know, talking to you, I'm just thinking back, like, maybe there's another system to do this with. Like, there's another grant that would do that. It was kind of like, that just fell into my lap. Hey, you can do this. I checked into it. That doesn't work for me. And this approach of like, send out invitations to all, you know, apply to every college, apply for every scholarship. Like, there may be a way to do that. I really probably should look into that.
Yeah, if there's a clearinghouse site that is really geared toward that, I haven't found one that worked for me. I've always found individual grants and then kind of drilled down individually on them and applied that way.
Okay, cool. And I like that approach too. Like, get as close to the source as you can. This is the Cantillon effect with government. Like, the entities that are closest to the government's money become billionaires. And we can emulate that pattern, if not that exact procedure, in looking at who's actually issuing this grant. And if I can move up the line and submit directly in some ways, I never even realized there would be ways that would get in the way of that. I didn't ever understand that. Like, you're saying that there are some grants that maybe if I'm applying through this funnel, it's not direct, but I could apply direct. Is that what you're saying?
What I think is they're like aggregate sites that gather a lot of information about a lot of grants, but sometimes they'll give you a long list of things, but 99% of them you can't take advantage of because you're not eligible. So you'll say, I want, you know, agricultural grants in Pennsylvania, and you'll get on, you know, I said grants.com. I don't know if that's a real site, but it's going to be something like that, right?
Yeah.
And it's just going to be a bunch of useless information, essentially, because it's not going to lead anywhere.
Okay.
Whereas if you're very specific in your search and then look for something that ends in .edu or .org rather than .com, that's where you're going to find results. And then usually they'll list a grant coordinator for that particular agency. Those people are happy to talk to you. You give them a call and you say, hey, I'm interested in applying for a grant X next year. You know, is there anything that's commonly missed or any common mistakes that I can avoid? And they're happy to tell you.
I honestly think that maybe we need a coalition of podcasters. I mean, I'm partially into this world, but there's podcasters that are totally into this world. I hear from listeners on occasion, and I'll put out the information that so-and-so is doing a grant, and they're accepting five people for a grant, and it's usually ag. And a lot of them aren't even universities. They're companies. And so I'm sure there's some kind of ass washing on the other side of it where they're, you know, improving society or something, and they're getting some kind of tax break themselves. I mean, there's actually a lot of ag done by big corporations that are like buffer areas around what they're doing because they have to have a certain, like Alcoa, we did a project for up in Arkansas, and they're dealing with waste aluminum, and it's this horrid process. So they have like, God, it's like 20,000 acres of buffer land that they have to do something with. So I guess in extension to that, sometimes they're like providing grants to see what they can do. I'm not sure why they do it, but I've seen some fairly large companies just throw money into this space as grants.
I'm sure it's, you know, tax advantageous for them to do so, but they can also, it's also going to help them build, you know, social capital with their neighbors and everything else. Like, hey, look, you know, we're building crane habitat around our factory or something like that. So good for the crane and good for the person that owns the land doing the work.
So. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So talk a little bit more about this Pennsylvania Veterans Farming Network and what it will do for the veterans in PA, because I'm going to bet most states have something like it, even if the person listening is not from PA.
I'm sure. And if they don't, they should, and they should probably start one, right? So I happen to be on the board of the network this year. We kind of rotate board members, but they did so much good for me, I was certainly willing to help. But we host one workshop in person each year. We do a lot of farm visits and stuff so that people can get in and kind of see executed projects and see what people are doing. But it's all about, so if you are a currently serving or honorably discharged service member, or, you know, their families as well, we like to give them as much access to opportunities as possible. They'll even pay tuition assistance if you want to take a course. So a membership is a great idea for any Pennsylvania veteran, certainly. But there's so many benefits. This year we issued $200,000 in grants to awardees throughout the state for various projects. Obviously highly competitive, but the grants were up to $10,000. So, it was a great thing that the organization did this year. And I'm sure that Maryland, New York, Texas, I'm sure they all have, especially Texas. Texas has an enormous veteran population.
Yes, so we do. And we have a lot of programs at the state level for vets too.
You may have more than one private veteran organization that is interested in helping guys get started or helping them further their existing businesses.
Hmm. Yeah, I know we have one very similar to what you're talking about, at least one. Can't remember the name off the top of my head, but I know we have something that's specific at the state level for veterans in the state of Texas for agriculture. Like you said, it's probably more than one, but I know we have at least one. And I would bet most states do. This is actually becoming more and more a thing anyway. Like, I will say this. I hate our government. I hate our government. I hate our government. I hate our government. But I do think there's a lot of good people in government trying to do the right thing. And I think in the ag space, there's especially the people that are in the field talking to farmers. I think they're very aware. I think they're hyper aware at this point of the damage that we've done to the topsoil and the crisis that represents, like a real crisis, not a manufactured one on the TV news. It's funny, like all the real crises never are on the TV news. And some of the best people in our space that are no longer with government come from places like NRCS. Like Ray Archuleta is one of my actual freaking heroes. And this is a guy that took a full retirement eventually after like 30 years of service and came home and went, I can't actually retire. And he's out mostly on his own dime now, traveling around helping farmers on the ground. And so I think that we're starting to get to a point where we will see more of this, because it's becoming more and more evident, I think, even in the bureaucracy space, we have to do something. Like, this is, and the more I've learned, the bigger I realize that the problem is. When you go look at some of these pictures, like stuff I'm gathering for my next course on soils, and you've got a guy standing with a 2-meter stick, and it looks like he's on a cutout road. And he's actually, this is where we didn't plow, and this is where we have plowed for 70 years. And we've lost 6 feet of soil in 70 years. I'm thinking that's a problem. I don't think we can continue with this. And I think that there is a concerted effort, at least to the mission-oriented people in the bureaucracy, to try to do something about this, because they see it obviously more than I do, because they're out there with farmers every day looking at it.
Yeah, I mean, the way you start is by actually getting work done. So I would encourage, I know for a fact that there are multiple Pennsylvania Guardsmen listening to this right now, right? So I would encourage them to look up the Pennsylvania Veteran Farming Network and join, right? And mm-hmm. then look at all their opportunities. If they're in another state, then find your state, it doesn't even have to be government sponsored, but find an organization of like-minded individuals that are already actively working. And that's where you're going to be successful, right? But not by, talking about it by actually getting out there and do it. Go visit a farm that has executed grant projects, see what they did, talk to the farmer and find out, you know, hey man, you applied for this thing. How'd you do it? I want to replicate what you did on my farm or on my property that's going to be a farm or on my leased land that's going to be a farm. Like there's so many ways to get it done, but it's certainly a huge pool of available money that sometimes goes unissued because there wasn't enough competition for it.
Awesome. And I think that's something important to add. I've talked to many people who say that they have within their grants money that's not allocated every year. That literally if anybody else had applied, who qualified? Like you can't be like, I want money because I like money. Like you actually did the work. You applied properly. You matched what they asked. They would have given you the money because they have to give out the money. Like it's not really good for them to build up. It's like when I was in the Army, like you get a call toward the end of the year, like you need to spend the money in your budget at the motor pool.
Like, yeah, otherwise your budget is less.
You know? Yeah.
And if you're authorized or if your grant's $100,000 but you only issue $75,000 worth of grant awards, then next year your grant budget is $75,000.
Correct. So they
lost.
So that's why you apply for it. You have no idea who's going to say yes.
Yeah, and more often than not, again, I'm highly successful at grant writing, and I think it's just due to, first of all, taking time and not putting forth crappy applications, but it's also like I have a lot of applications out there, so I'm yielding a lot of results that, you know, typically wouldn't come to me because I didn't ask for it. So, and I'll keep trying for the ones that tell me no, too.
Yeah, go back to them.
Yeah.
Like you said, read the winner's proposals and cheat off your neighbor because it's acceptable, certainly. Right? Yeah, absolutely. And understand that the person judging the grants will probably be, there'll probably be more than one, but there'll be the same group or at least some of them will be the same group that said to this person last year, yes, but they're not going to like go, oh, this is plagiarism. That's the thing that worked on those people. So use it again, right?
Yeah, make it situational and applicable to you.
Yeah.
More importantly, on the people reading the grants, and this is a great tip for writing grants in general, but you have to assume that person is not an expert in whatever you're asking to do. So don't use jargon. Don't use big words.
Mm.
Don't use odd words. Write your grant proposal like you're sitting at a bar with a complete stranger and trying to explain a project you think is cool. It's going to give you a lot more success. And then also understand that, again, one person is probably reading 100 of these every day. So you need to write it in such a way that it reads easily. It's been proofread. Find whoever your most critical friends are and have them read it before you send it off and be like, tear this thing apart. And ChatGPT is a great idea, right? Send it in there. That's going to find any grammatical errors. You're going to get a lot of good feedback from, you know, find your biggest asshole friends and have them read it and send it back to you, you know, red penned up. And then that's going to give you a good result as well.
Yeah. A hack with GPT is say things like, what level you want to write this at? You probably don't want to write a college thesis level for something, even though that person might have a degree, but that person doesn't know anything about the thing you're talking about. So you can say, take this and explain it to me like I'm a 10th grader.
Yeah, because the odds are the person, if it's an agricultural grant, they have a very broad understanding of a lot of topics, but they probably don't know anything about building silvopasture with pigs.
No.
So you don't use pig specific jargon, right? Say, look, I wanna take pigs and make this underutilized woodlot into something lush and worthy of accepting cows down the road. And that's gonna communicate much better.
Yeah, yeah. And like you know, GPT is about trying until you get what you're looking for. So if you say do it at a 10th grade level and you read it, so that's a little sophomoric or whatever. Say do it again and do it like I'm a 12th grader. Like you can, you know, don't take the first result with it. That's a different subject, but it will help you when you're doing that. I think that might do more for people. Somebody was here asking about taking grant writing courses, and that's probably not going to help you that much, in my opinion. Like the problem with stuff like that is anybody can make one and sell it. So unless you know the source, I probably wouldn't do that.
Yeah, I would, again, your best consultants are going to be your highly critical friends.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to have a problem telling you that this sounds dumb or, you know, this is.
Or I don't know what the hell you're talking about. Like, exactly. You know, when you say, like, don't use weird words, like, don't even use weird words that we don't think are weird. Do not put the word permaculture in a grant unless it's from a permaculture institute. Right. Like right. You, organic farming, regenerative farming, use words that normies use to describe what we do. You know, I even tell people that, like, when people like say, I'm going to do a landscaping business that does permaculture and I'm going to call it permaculture landscaping. I'm like, 90% of the people who see that aren't going to know what it means. Use edible landscaping, something like that. Use something that, you know, if you're selling to Karen in the suburbs, you've Karen language. If you're writing something that's going to go to somebody that gives out money for Exxon, use their language. Always use the language of the prospect, I guess, is the way to put it.
It's going to give you a better result.
Yeah, definitely. Can you talk about, you mentioned a few things you've done. Are there some things like, if I didn't do this, this thing that's now benefiting me and my farm would not have been done yet?
Oh, absolutely. So the pigs in the woods is something I wanted to do. I don't remember exactly where I got the idea, but I was in, so my agricultural interest started late in the Army, and it was me sitting in Kuwait probably on YouTube just watching Darby Simpson or Joel Salatin videos or something. And then that led down to like this ideal farm. So when I got this property, again, thanks to my wife and her encouragement, I didn't know what I wanted to do with it. So I got some pigs. I went and got 6 pigs and I put them in some electric fencing in the woods. And that went okay, but they quickly kind of beat up an area and stuff. I was able to, after 1 year of raising pigs, get online, and I started with feeders, right? So my first feeder was a inverted 55-gallon drum with this little plywood contraption at the bottom that just shuffled food left and right, and the pigs ate. Well, tons of waste. At one point, the pigs were wasting probably 50 pounds of feed a day. And once it's on the ground, they don't want to eat it if there's food in the feeder. The next year, I upgraded to another handmade built but butter one, made out of an IBC tote, and that worked really well. But then I was able to apply for a grant, this is a national grant, and it's called the Brighter Future Fund. It's by American Farmland Trust, another private organization. And they were able to give me money to buy a commercial outdoor hog feeder that holds 1,000 pounds of feed, and it's advertised as zero waste, which I was highly skeptical of.
Okay, but, yeah.
But it is... If it's 1% waste, that number's high.
Okay.
So it is near zero waste. The trick is having it on level ground so that it sheds water around and water never gets into the feed. But there's only so much you can do with sideways rain, right? So,
yeah.
So you may have a very small amount of waste, but this is truly a game changer for me. It's going to save me hundreds of dollars a year on feed waste. So it's a $3,000 feeder. It's going to pay for itself in a couple of years.
And what did you pay out of pocket for it since you got grant money for it?
Nothing.
Ah.
So it was 100% funded by the grant. And then, funny about this. So I wrote the grant, right? And this is another useful tip. So I wrote the grant for $4,000, I think, for a specific brand of hog feeder. It's the RO45. I don't remember the brand name at this point. But it's a specific, that was the model number, and it holds 45 bushels. That's the 45. Osborne's the brand.
Okay.
So when I went to buy it, so I wrote that, and then 8 months later, I get a check. So okay. When I went to buy it, it wasn't available. There was like a 3-year lead time on it or something crazy.
Ooh.
So I emailed the people and said, look, I can't buy this thing, but I found a comparable product, and
yeah.
it's $1,500 less. So that's going to give me an excess on the grant award of $1,500. Here's two options. I can send you back a check for $1,500 since I'm only spending $2,500 of your money.
Yeah.
Or I can use this $1,500 to buy calf shelters. If you've ever driven down the road and see those tan calf shelters and I can put my pigs in them as for out of the weather rain, you know, protection. Cause since then I've been using, pallets nailed together and with corrugated metal on top.
Okay.
They sent back and said, yeah, that's a great idea. Use the money to buy calf shelters. So out of my feeder grant, I got a great feeder. I swear by it. It's made by Brower. That thing is awesome. I have my YouTube channel has a bunch of videos on it. If anybody watches those videos, they're going to buy this feeder if they're raising pigs outside. But and then I also got three calf shelters for nothing, all covered by the grant. So huge win.
Have you ever like calculated out like the total value of all your grants together, or can you throw?
I haven't, but I gotta be approaching $50,000 in 6 years.
Okay.
I haven't factored it all, but it's if it's not 50, it's more. It's 60. So that gets a lot of work done when it's not coming out of your profit margin.
Well, it's not just that it's not coming out of your profit margin. Even if you had the $60,000, now you still have the $60,000.
Certainly, like, and you have the stuff.
And you have the stuff. It to me, in some ways, like if I was willing to pay for it, it's almost like it's $120,000 because I got the $60,000. I still have the other $60,000, and I can still do another $60,000 worth of things that nobody will give me money for. And that's why I just kind of scoff at people that are like, well, I don't want it because they're going to know something they don't. Yet. Like I said, man, the federal government knows whatever it wants to know about you anyway, and they probably don't care that you're farming pigs.
No,
and honestly, I would tell you, if anybody cares that you're farming pigs and would be a problem, what history has shown us, it would be your state's government. PA, I haven't heard any problems with this in any meaningful way yet. But like Michigan, there's been some real issues there. But that wasn't because Baker's Green Acres took a grant. That was because the state of Michigan is full of busybody assholes. That's why that happened.
I've had no problems with the Pennsylvania Department of Ag. They've something I've done. Yeah, I mean, our state is a little stringent on things like poultry processing, but a lot, most states are, right? But I'm still able to get everything done. I stay within the confines of the law, and PA Department of Ag has never, ever given me any kind of hassle. So I have nothing bad to say about them. I wish I could do a lot more chickens, but then again, I don't know that I could sell a lot more chickens right now because I still work full time for the Army. So farming is part time for me. My days are pretty full. So for me to kind of...
You're guard, but you're full-time guard.
Yeah, I'm AGR, if you're familiar with that. It's active guard. I work every day on Indiantown Gap, where you used to hunt.
Very cool. What are your thoughts on the review process and some tips, just like some final tips for people to do this in a way that will end up working out for them?
So again, be compelling in your language. Review it yourself multiple times. Have friends and family review. And then once you get all the language done and you think you've put your best foot forward, I think that an important thing, most grants are going to have a budgetary worksheet. And they're always in Excel, and they're always generally the same. But one thing I've done that I took from previous successful awardees is I put a hyperlink to the thing. So if it's for a hog panel, I'll put the hog panel on my budget sheet with its current price, and then I'll put in the notes like the year. So because when you're writing grants in January, they might not be reviewed till March or April, and then prices can increase. So I also add a hyperlink to the item on the Tractor Supply website, for instance. That way the grant reviewer can look at the thing, see that it's legitimate. And sometimes you'll write your grant and your total will be $8,500 in parts. Well, they'll send you $9,000 because they had the link and they can go in and kind of see that everything you've ordered has gone up by 3 or 4%. So it's happened to me multiple times where they've sent me more than I asked for because of inflation. So that's a huge tip. And then, just again, be neat and orderly, especially with the money side, because that's where they're going to focus a lot of their effort. So if you submit a well-researched budgetary sheet that captures every expense down to the nitty-gritty, like even nuts and bolts if they allow for it. Sometimes they'll have a single line item for incidentals, and that's where you would lump all that stuff. But if not, you can itemize down to the individual nut, and depending on the project, like obviously if you're building a house, you wouldn't want to do that, right? But depending on the project, it can be beneficial to you because now they see, look, this person put a lot of thought and effort into this. They know exactly what they want to do, and they are highly probable to execute and not waste our money.
And I do that anyway. If I'm going to build a chicken coop, I do a takeoff on it, and I throw everything in there. I think that's a skill people should have anyway, because I see so many people say, well, I'm going to do this thing, and they have no idea what the cost is going to be. I mean, my son wanted to make a playhouse for his kids, and I'm like, we have like 12 sheds on this property that they can play in, and they're here more than their home, but I'll humor you. And all I did with him is I went to Lowe's, and we just spec'd out the most basics to frame it and everything, and I just threw it all in there, and then it immediately gave a number, and he went, oh, no, I'm not doing that, right? Like it's, or like you mentioned a business plan, because I hear people, I'm going to do this thing for a farm business, and I'm like, so how many do you have to sell to make enough money that it's worth doing? And they don't, it's not even can you sell it, like they don't even know if I can get this much, and then this is my expense per unit, and I feel good because for every unit I'm making $7, right? They haven't even done the math, so that means if I do 1,000 of them, which I can't do, I'm going to make $7,000 a year. Is that even worth doing for the, right. Or should I be doing something else? Like, I really, you're going to sell eggs. I'm like, okay, so that's a good, like, unless you marry that, unless it's like a loss leader that builds a customer base, like, that's a good way to, unless you're doing something really niche like we do, that's a good way to go poor.
Earlier when we were discussing business plan development, which is a requirement in most grant applications, they want to see, if you're a going concern, they want to see your business plan. Is going to be a break-even analysis where that work is done, right? That's going to be a part of your financial portion of your business plan. Typically,
when
they want like a 10-page.
When does it cancel out and become an asset, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, absolutely. So how many of this widget would I have to sell before it's worth my time, right? Where I'm now, I've covered all my costs, and going forward, I'm actually profitable.
So that was growing something that was easy to process and pelletize as a feed. Like a mixed feed out of using, let's say, fodder, trees, and grain mixed together, right? And so, and if I apply for a grant to get that material to put in a hammer, mill, and pelletizer, it's very reasonable for the person giving the money to say, so after this is done and you start making bags of feed, what's your market? Who's going to buy it? How much is it going to sell for? And when does the ROI that we gave you come to a net zero that we've actually done something for the future instead of funded your hobby for 3 years?
And
right,
like
they
want
to know that information, and you should want that information too.
Right. And if you don't have those answers, you're much less likely to receive the grant.
I wouldn't give you the money.
So, unless it was that scenario where you're an applicant and they need to justify their budget, right? So, but that doesn't happen that often. A lot of grants do go unfunded sometimes.
Yeah.
But many of them have, you know, they only fund, you know, 60% or 70% of applications, some a lot less.
Yeah. Bill, put your app in real quick at the deadline. No, Bill, I need to get rid of this money.
Right, exactly.
You're gonna qualify. Just fill out all the spaces, right? I guarantee you some of that back end stuff goes on. Like, I know a guy. I think what people need to understand is, like, your job, if you oversee these grants, is to get the money out. That's probably why when you contacted on that one and said, hey, I can't buy this, but I can buy this lower cost one, you can either have the money back or I can spend it this other way that makes sense. But spend it, because I don't – like, think of that person, what they have to deal with if you send them a check back.
Yeah, they got to find a way to dispose of it.
If you're donating it on the other end, then that's fine. But if you're actually – I wrote a check and sent money out as a grant authorization and it came back, but it only partially came back.
Yeah, you got to explain it.
Oh, man, the bureaucracy that probably has to go through. I don't want it back, you know. And I think the bigger the bureaucracy, the more it's true that they don't want it back.
Yeah, and with that one, I was deviating from my original proposal, right? So all I did was email them, and they sent me kind of approval in writing, like, yes, we authorize this deviation from the plan, go buy the calf shelters, and, you know, and then it's a win for everybody.
And I think you should probably have some thoughts like that in your head. What would I do if I get the money and if something that I was trying to purchase is no longer available? Because you may just find, like you did, that, hey, I found this equivalent product for less money.
Yeah, significantly less. So,
and I would also say that's why you should always ask for as much as you can possibly ask for.
Yeah, I mean, as long as you have a good plan, right? Because if you send in if you send in kind of a fluffed proposal, I think you're going to put
No, I don't mean that.
Yeah. Yeah, like, but do as much work as you can. If the grant's a $10,000 grant, figure out how to do $10,000 worth of work.
Yeah.
You know, and then if it factors in a labor rate, like the SARE grant does, well, obviously, so I put my SARE grant in there. I put a $30 an hour labor rate, which I think is a nice middle of the road agricultural labor rate. It's probably a little on the low side.
You didn't put a lawyer's rate in, but you didn't put in a
minimum wage or
clerk either.
Exactly. And, you know, and they had no problem. I didn't get any pushback on the labor rate at $30 an hour. So
let's, and we got a bunch of them. I'm surprised at how many. Let's roll through these pretty quick, like lightning round these, and then we'll be able to cut you loose and let you go. Brendan says, how does one find out about grants? I think we pretty much covered that unless you got any last.
Google's a useful tool.
Google. All right. Are there grants for buying land to use in farming?
I have not come across any. I would say probably not.
K-Bonk, do you sell your beef?
I do. I sell it by the quarter. It's all custom slaughter, so I don't, you know, I'm not USDA inspected, at least not this year. That might come in the future. But
are you doing what I do when I buy one, where basically the guy takes the cow to the slaughterhouse for me and I pay them?
Yes.
I pay them for processing and you for hanging weight or whatever.
The only difference is I think my way is a little better. The butcher comes to me. The cow is dispatched in my pasture and never has to deal with the stress of being loaded in a truck and driven to the shop.
I love that.
Yeah, it's a mobile processing service in Pennsylvania. Dude's pretty cool. So it's Mountain Man Mobile Processing. I think he's getting out of the mobile processing business, but so far it's been a huge bonus for my farm.
That's a good business. I had a girl on earlier this year that's doing it in Oklahoma. She's up toward the Tulsa area. And she's like, I have all the business I can take. Like, she says, I'll get people that want me to drive further. And I'm like, I can't, you can't afford to pay me what it takes me to drive the other end of the state. And I don't have time to do it. Right. So like, she was like, there could be 20 more people like me in Oklahoma and we wouldn't fight for business.
Right.
More that's available, the more business there'll probably be. Like, I've said that with mobile processing here. If there was somebody that would, let's say, mobile process chickens, I got a 1 acre east or 1 acre west pasture that I could raise 1,000 chickens a year on. I don't want to process them.
I use a mobile processor for my chickens too. Luckily, there's a bunch of those. This is the only guy that does beef and pork in Pennsylvania, at least that I've been able to find. So
I think that's a business opportunity for people waiting to happen too. Like, not everybody needs to grow the food. Like, I honestly think that self-processing's great, but you only have so much time and you're going to become really good at what you do the most of. So let somebody that specializes in one aspect of it do that piece for you. And with a mobile processor, it's really great because it's not like hiring somebody you have to pay 12 months out of the year. You pay them to do the thing that they're going to do when they're going to do it. You throw it right into your Excel spreadsheet to figure out what you charge, and you're done.
Plus, I'm not a professional butcher, and I want to sell a professional product. So.
Yep, agreed. Do you need to be zoned ag to get a farm grant?
I don't think they would check. I am zoned ag.
Okay.
But I don't know that anyone's going to call your township or zoning board and say, is this dude really a farm? Your Schedule F will show that.
That's what makes you a farm, is the fact that you're filing farm income, because there's, for instance, here, I can't even be zoned agriculture myself because I'm 3 acres. You have to have 5 in Texas to be zoned. And now they're working on coming up with some cutouts for that because urban farming is a thing now. People are using bees to go zoned ag. So that may change, but I know I could have gotten a grant from NRCS and I'm not zoned ag. And I think the other thing is there's a lot of people like going from not zoned ag to zoned ag. If you do everything perfectly, at least it takes a 5-year process.
For me, it was very quick.
Okay.
So I think my land was previously zoned something similar to agriculture.
Okay.
Like it was a horse farm. So it was like recreational agriculture or something. I just made it for profit. I think it was $35 at the zoning board.
The problem we have here is our local property tax takers hate this because they're the ones that get cut, right? The money they take from you goes down you're sitting on 10 acres and you're paying property tax on the whole 10 acres as residential, and now you're paying a half an acre in the house.
Right.
And that's a sizable benefit to you and a sizable detriment to them. And we have some really greedy people in that world.
In PA, there's a program called Clean and Green, which this property is enrolled in. It's essentially, I believe, a 100-year agreement with the state, but you can never develop the land and you pay an agricultural rate for that
job. Okay. That's cool. Oh, like BLM land type of thing or something. It's not BLM or something else. And I remember from Pennsylvania, too, there was another type of thing like that you could do and get a huge cut.
Like the homestead exemption or farm.
No, it was something for like to leave for wildlife, like a certain piece that you cut out and you left it as like wildlife.
That's part of what I was just describing.
Yeah.
So it's three choices. You can either like leave it as untouched land for PA state game, or you can allow people to hunt it, or you have to raise $1,000 in agricultural income. There's like lots of qualifiers.
Yeah, we have that too here. Now that you say that, I had a guy on the show about 2 years ago, and we could do things like you're managing for deer and squirrels, and you can get that if your land is big enough. And if you're actually doing it, can you get a grant to dig a well?
So I assume yes.
Yeah.
They're expensive. You may not be able to completely fund the whole project to include the pump, but you could at least offset your out-of-pocket expense, especially if it was to support water cows or something.
Yeah. Fred says, do you know if there's any grants geared toward a homestead? I don't think that they would. I would never use that word
in
a grant app, but your homestead can be a farm. Like we were saying earlier, like the Schedule F and declaring yourself a farm, paying an ag tax, a tax on ag income, having ag income to report, this is what makes you a farm. There's farms that literally don't own any land. Like Polyface, Joel Salton's farm, does have some land, but the vast majority of the land they farm is not theirs. It's leased. So I don't think it really has to do with what land you own. It has to do with your function. So you could be a homestead that's also a farm.
I would say it's a mindset and kind of phrasing issue. So don't call it a homestead.
No.
You can just say, because you're not going to get a grant to support your six chickens that lay eggs for your breakfast. But if you're building infrastructure to support egg layer business that may or may not ever come to fruition, then you may be able to get a grant there. And then by the time you get the infrastructure in and you see how many eggs you can produce, it might turn into the business. You know, it might be a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah. 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 Be careful of words. Like that's so important. Back when we were doing the work in West Virginia, my partners up there kept saying we're having trouble getting insurance. And I'm like, I got a million things to do. I don't really have time. And I felt like, okay, let's solve this. What is, first of all, what kind of insurance are we getting and why? And it was like, when we run events here, if somebody puts a chainsaw through their leg, we're probably going to have a problem no matter what disclaimer we have or waiver we have. Okay, so sure. And, it's $1,800 a year to have insurance on this. Probably worth it. How do you know that? That's what the agent said. I said, then why can't he give you an actual price and why can't we do this? We'll write a check and we're done for a year. Well, they said they kept kicking it back. I'm like, well, go find out why. Well, whoever did it, whether it was Charlie or Josiah or whoever, said the function of the farm was to be a permaculture farm. Well, every single person in the insurance company's eyes crossed and they're rolled back in their head and they had no idea. I'm like, just change it to organic farm.
Yeah, because they don't know how to insure.
They just off and put farm.
They can't insure something they're not familiar with.
Right, so they put farm on it, boom, here's a check, done. Like, and with an insurance company, you're dealing with somebody that wants your money, so you can keep going back. With a grant, you kind of send it off this year. You use a stupid word, you can try again next year.
That's right?
Sure. They're not that inclined to give you money where they're like, they're dying to do it. So be careful with stuff like that. Yeah, I would never use the word homestead. Can you, unless it's a homestead, like if you find one, then yeah, go all in. Can you recommend a template website for writing the business plan? You basically said the way that they have the proposals lined out, it's kind of walks you through it.
If you, so this would be particular to agricultural businesses, I believe. But if you Google ag plan, I forget what school sponsors it. I've helped people write business plans on it before. It's just not fresh in my mind.
Okay.
But it's a free service. And then you kind of pick your reviewer. I'm probably still listed in there as a reviewer.
Okay.
But then it is that templated business plan development site I was talking, like similar to what I was talking about, where it says, fill in this block. Cool. And then you do that 1,000 times.
Uh-huh.
And at the end, it spits out a 10-page, very professional-looking business plan. I think it's called Ag Plan.
Okay.
I can email you later, and you could add it, I guess, to the show notes.
Yeah, if you just shoot it over to me, I'll add it to the audio side. That for that, guys, everything that I have available from CJ, there's a link down in the video notes. If you're watching the video instead of listening to the audio, you click that, you'll jump over to episode 3541. And that's where I put all the links. So that one link kind of is the master link to all. And if you click it right now, if you're watching us live, you won't find anything because we're not done yet. I think the other thing is, and not so much for a business plan, but for the grant writing, like the best guide to that, if this, unless it's the first year they're giving that grant out, now that I know you can look at who won last year, go look at that. Do what they did. Like, that's pretty simple. If you get, this is from Jeff. This is an interesting question. If you get a grant, and then for whatever reason you can't do what the grant was for, something pops up, what do you do then?
So I've never run into that situation. I expect that they would want the money back.
Yeah.
So the first thing I would do in that situation is contact the people that gave me the grant and say, hey, here's my, you know, can I get an extension? That's,
yeah,
you know, smart play number one is ask for an extension.
Okay.
Then if not, if you can't get an extension or that's not the problem, then maybe change the context of the grant. Maybe you can, once you're the awardee, right? So you got,
yeah,
the money. So maybe you can change the proposal to something else that meets their goals and allows you to execute. And then I guess, you know, option number three is you just give them the money back and then.
Yeah. His real question was like, if I got a $4,000 grant and I have to give the money back, are they going to fine me or ask for more than they gave me? I've never heard of it.
Yeah, I doubt it. They probably just want their $4,000 back.
Yeah, and they probably would prefer not to take it back,
right,
in those businesses. If you can give them any viable alternative, they'll probably sign off on it.
I would agree.
Rachel's asking a totally different question, not really about grants. Where did you go search for your business name? And she said more. She was saying if the business name is available. Here, all I would do is go to the state website and see, because the name is the corporate or LLC name, and it will tell you, you put a name in, it'll tell you if somebody already has it.
Same in Pennsylvania.
Okay. There you go, Rachel. They had the same thing in PA. She's not far from you. She asked if she maybe could get you as a coach. She works in Allentown, but she lives like much closer to you than Allentown.
So my email is skylinepassions@gmail.com. So I would be happy to consult. I don't know how many people are going to, you know, if I get 1,000 people asking me to, you know, that's going to be too much then. But if it's one or two people that want me to like read through their grants, I'm happy to do it. I would, you know, for free consultation or whatever. So certainly.
So this is more, I guess, a grant writing component. Like, do you need to get pricing? This is from Hey Alabama. Do you need to get pricing from your local co-ops and farm stores to fill out your grant forms? I think you need to know what you're buying and who you're getting it from and how much it costs. And it doesn't matter who that is, but you need to have, you don't just throw in a generic thing. You're going to go out and find pricing somewhere.
Well, that's what I did. And like I said, when we spoke about it earlier about the budgetary sheet, which is a requirement for most grants, I actually put a hyperlink to the item at the vendor. Now, if it's like somebody coming to do excavation, then you could include, you could call them right beforehand and just get a quote, then call you on to get a quote, and then you have a good number to put on your form.
Okay, Jeff's asking, I guess, me a question because this has nothing to do with grants, but I'll allow it because at least it's ag. He said he made his first biochar. It doesn't have the glass sound. I think it's more like good charcoal. Can I still use his biochar? It should make the glass sound if it's charcoal. I will tell you that it's very possible that you quenched it and it's not fully dry. And that's why it will not make the sound of glass twinkling until it's dry. So if it's fully dried out and it doesn't do that, you probably have not made charcoal. It's probably not fully, pyrolyzed. And your other test would be get the gunk all over your hands. So it looks like you played with dirty tires if your hands will wash clean with clean water, you've made biochar. And if they won't, you have volatiles in there that need to be burned off. Angie said, we used to have a casino that was local. Part of the agreement with the county in order to build was that it had to give out grants every year. That's a comment, not a question. That's kind of what I was saying. There are people, there are companies, corporations, entities, organizations that maybe do some form of ecological harm. And basically, it's like, you know, a rich guy, like if I get busted committing a crime, they throw me in a clink. Rich guy, well-known celebrity gets busted, you know, doing some kind of crime. He might go talk to school children about why they should stay on the straight and narrow and get community service instead. And so some of these things come up like this. It's like carbon offsets or whatever in a different way where, okay, you're on a wetland and you're disturbing the habitat of the striped-tailed foofy flew. And as a business operational expense, you will give away $150,000 a year to help improve the habitat of the striped-tailed foofy flew elsewhere. Like, there are things like that. And that's what I'm saying. I think that when you look for grants, there's a lot of people doing this that you would not normally associate with doing it. I've heard from actually somebody sent one in a couple of years ago that was SpaceX was giving away the money. Right. So like that's not who you would think you would apply for an ag grant from. So I'm just saying check a lot of sources because you might find. And I got one more. Hogus says, what is the time frame for receiving a grant from start to finish? I guess that depends on who you applied to.
Yeah, it's very specific to the grant. And it'll be advertised. If it's a reputable grant, it's going to be advertised. They're going to say, hey, we're accepting proposals in this like 6-week window.
Yep.
And then we have 3 months to make our decision. And then checks will be sent out 60 days after that. And then you have X amount of time to execute and send us your final report. So it is, it's very specific to the individual grant. On the biochar thing reminded me, but I had emailed you, a little while ago. There's it's in Pennsylvania, it's in Schuylkill County and a bunch of surrounding counties.
Okay.
But there's a biochar company in PA that's trying to get large scale row croppers to incorporate biochar in soy fields, and they're giving it away for nothing. If these guys will, so the grant hasn't been approved, but they're in the application stages and they're just looking for a list of farmers. And I'll send that to you again so that you have it fresh.
Yeah, send me that. So if I understand what you're saying there, because you cut out just a second, of course, right at the end, that's when it always happens. It sounds like they're not giving you a grant to make biochar. They're going to give you the biochar to put in your field. Is that what they're doing? Oh, that's awesome.
Yep. And so again, it's not an approved grant yet. It's an application. But if it were to come to fruition, they want to supply row croppers, essentially. It's not specified as row croppers, but once you read it, you'll see that's what they're looking for.
That's going back into what we talked about, like people doing that are actually behind it, where the money's coming from, that are not the people you would think of. Microsoft right now has a bid out to buy more biochar than exists. Now, it has to fall under certain things. It has to be like, and people get really nervous when you say this word, virgin timber. And that just simply means that it came off trees that weren't treated with chemicals and used to build a house, and it's not offcuts from a frame of a house. Like, that's what it means. It's from something that grew in the ground and it was unadulterated. And it has to meet these certain criteria to be a carbon offset. So by buying it, Microsoft gets to play in that cap and trade market, but they don't really have anything to do with it. There's place for they can use a little bit of it. They can throw it out in their field outside their campus in Washington or something. But like the amount they want to buy, they got to put. And part of the deal is it can't just be there. It has to go do something. So maybe that's why Bill Gates bought so much farmland. Who knows?
Well, this pertains to a handful of counties in central Pennsylvania and eastern Pennsylvania. But but if it's awarded and you're one of the farmers who asked for it, essentially.
Yeah.
Then the way it reads to me, it's still. They'll give you a bunch. You spread it in with your seed or whatever, and you spread it on your fields.
Oh, hell yeah.
And it's going to be inoculated already, so you're not putting raw charcoal out there. You're putting inoculated charcoal out into your field.
Yeah, I smell some offset for, like, Redding Coal or, you know, Capital Coal or something. That's probably what it is, because if it's Schuylkill County, like, that's and there's not a lot of mining still going on like there was back in the heyday. There's some of it still, but there's also some of those corporations still exist, and they're basically paying penance for their past now. That could be the source of that money. It would not surprise me, because I grew up there, and there's been damage done there by the coal companies that you've probably seen that most people, I think, can't even get their head around. Like, you know, orange rivers from the sulfur, and we call them black deserts where the abandoned breakers are and stuff like that. And
treeless hills.
Yes. 100 okay. years they haven't done any work, and there's still no trees there. Or there's like one tree that survived somehow. It's pretty awful. So it's their way of making restitution, I guess, one way or another, getting out of jail with the government. And it, again, if you can get it, I would get it. And the fact that it's inoculated is huge.
Yeah, and I didn't see any stipulation on there. Yeah, you wouldn't want to put uninoculated charcoal out there, but no. I didn't see any stipulation on the size or the size of the farm or the size of the acreage.
Yeah.
It just read to me like they want it spread over a huge area. But again, I'll send it to you. You can read it.
Yeah, send me that, and I'll add anything I can to the notes. So anything you think of from this point forward, go ahead and just pop that over to me by email, and I'll get the audio out about 40 minutes from right now if you're watching live. Again, CJ, man, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
I will also be adding CJ's Facebook, his YouTube, and his Instagram, because I checked over here and I have that already. So I'll make sure that all goes into the audio notes. Skyline Pastures, at Skyline Pastures is his Instagram. And if you look for Skyline Pastures on YouTube, you'd probably find it. I would imagine Facebook as well, but I'll put those links in there. With that, as we wrap up today, thanks for tuning in today. I hope it was useful for everybody. I want people to realize, like, there is a lot of money like this available. There really is. And it's not just in this space. There are grants for all kinds of things. There are also, I kind of alluded to it when we were talking about making an analogy, but scholarships. There's so many people, young people are going to college, and man, like, I do not like a lot of Dave Ramsey's advice, but one of the best pieces of advice I've ever heard from him was, if you are in your senior year of high school and you get the summer and you've got like a 3.5 month period before you go to college, you can work a part-time job and make, you know, 10 bucks an hour. He said, or you can make your job applying for scholarships. And if you apply for 10 scholarships a day, and there's no reason you can't, by the end of the summer, you will have more money in scholarship money than you will ever earn by working at Burger King or Chick-fil-A. And I think that mindset when it comes to acquiring capital is something we need to do. And you know, one of the reasons I brought up the scholarship thing, you know, has time to do things like that? Young people. Young people that are not 45 years old and killing themselves at the peak of their career. Young people are trying to get started. And I think there's a lot of opportunity in this. Hell, I might hire my kid to be my grant writer, you know, to get like the legwork done and then polish it if I still had kids and was farming. And then I would pay him out of my pocket, and then I would 1099 him, and then he would never make enough money to pay taxes, but I would still deduct it. Like, start function stacking, keeping your money, okay? So you can get money and get paid to keep your money at the same time. Anyway, with that, before we wrap up, let's go ahead and remind you guys that you can help support the show. But before I even do that, I want to let you know about something pretty cool. Billy Bond reached out to me yesterday and asked me if I would let you guys know about an event he has going on. It's called the United Jamboree, or the Homestead United Jamboree. It looks really cool. There's going to be a pretty big focus on kind of the livestock side of things, composting, processing animals, and things like that. Billy's a great dude. He and I go back. We actually spent some time in Panama at the same time. We didn't realize it until we met a few years ago, but we probably drank a couple beers together at least one night while he was in country and I was permanently stationed there. Just an awesome dude. He has also been a professional butcher in his life, so he's really good at the processing stuff. This is in Fletcher, North Carolina, August 29 through 31. So just a couple weeks out, so not a lot of lead time coming into it. But again, check this out. This might be something you're interested in. Again, if you use the link in the video notes below, get over to my website, thesurvivalpodcast.com. Scroll down one or two posts, you'll find this. But you can also go to homesteadersunited.com right now and find out more information about it. And again, anything Billy's involved with, I know it's going to be well done. Next up today, the other way, or the way you can help us out, is do your online shopping at tspaz.com. That's T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. No matter what you buy, you will help us out. The product I have for you today has nothing to do with homesteading or agriculture, except, I don't know, I like to listen to podcasts and music while I work, and I don't always have headphones in. Sometimes other people are with me, or I'm just chilling out in the garden. Anchor has these awesome, and they're waterproof as well, Bluetooth speakers. They're 30% off. Right now, that means they're like $28. These things are great. Now, they're not, you know, thump the wall, shake the house loud, but they're louder than I need them to be. I never run them at full, and if you do run them at full, they don't start to sound like crap. When I say waterproof, I mean, like, you can set the thing in the shower, and it won't fade out on you. They're IPX7 waterproof. The coolest thing about them, though, again, they're $28 today. They're normally $40. So for about $56, you can buy two of them. Why would you do that? Because they will pair and do stereo. So in my back shop is where I keep my set of these, because I don't have, like, my high-end AV system out there. When I'm out there working, I just flip them on, get my phone, and either listen to a podcast or an audiobook or listen to music. I also, since they're portable, I'll take them outside in my garden. I have the big high things. I'll set them up on the trellises on both sides of the garden when I'm working or hanging out in the garden watching the fish in the pond. I'll listen to music out there. They're pretty cool, and they're durable as crap. My wife, I do not recommend doing this. My wife ran over one of them with her Subaru. It was my fault. I left it on the roof of the car or the bumper of the car or something, at least so she says. And she ran right over it. It smashed the screen and all, and it survived and it worked. So that tells me they're pretty durable as well. And since they're only about $30 a pop, you won't freak out if you lose one or someone walks off with it. You won't be afraid to take it to the beach or the lake or whatever. Because I have a badass Bose speaker. It's like $300. I ain't taking that thing anywhere where somebody could, you know, sticky finger discount it. Anyway, with that, I am ready to wrap up. Thank you for tuning in today. Tomorrow will be Thursday. It's time for an expert council show of the week. So I have a really great lineup of experts and one trial. I have a guy trying out for a position. Did a great segment. I'll play that tomorrow. We'll see if we can drum up some more questions for this fellow. And then Friday we'll have a flashback, and next week we'll do it all again. Take care, guys. Thanks for tuning in today.
They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way. Let me show you a better way.